and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida this week and then take your phone calls at the end of the show. First, though, before we do that, two listener comments about last Friday's show. Last Friday, we got into quite a discussion about immigration. That's what we'll hear the first comment about. And then toward the end, one of the last callers wanted, a male caller, wanted to say that he was okay with all the new laws being passed around the country banning abortions. And here's what two listeners had to say about last Friday's show.
This is Andrew in Hardy County. You can't stop tribal migration. I feel for Mark's fear and feeling of isolation. It's what put Trump in office. What he doesn't know about Latin America is that it all has a very white ruling class, white Castilian Europeans who can assure you that they know their pure European pedigree for hundreds of years. Same kind of people as me, except my folks came from Scotland, Northern Ireland, and England. But it's exactly the same population, and they are in control, which is why they are so cooperative with the U.S. Thanks for your fantastic show. We all owe you guys so much.
Regarding your Friday show at the end, regarding Rich, when Rich has a uterus, then he can have an opinion on those type of things. Other than that, he needs to shut up. Thank you.
Well, there you have a couple of listener comments. That came in after Friday's show. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Next, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night, which is a PBS show. It's on Friday nights on WEDU-TV. It's a discussion about state and local politics. We're going to talk about some of the big issues in the state from the past week. And then later on in the show, we'll take your phone calls. You can, while the show is on the air, you can email the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Here's Florida This Week, which usually involves a panel of two journalists and a Democrat and Republican. So let's listen in. Coming up next, the governor and cabinet travel to Israel to hold a meeting, sign some agreements, and possibly try to score some political points. Environmentalists are warning about another bill that's on the governor's desk. Pinellas Sheriff Bob Gualtieri tries to convince the school board to allow some teachers to be armed. And controversial remarks about abortion draw fire. Political insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week our panelists are Craig Pittman is an author and reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. Lisa Perry is the co-founder of the Common Ground Florida Project and a Democrat. Jack Brill is acting chair of the Sarasota Republican Party. And Eric Deggans is an author and the media critic for National Public Radio. Well, it's great to have all of you here. Nice to see you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and the cabinet held a meeting in Israel, a distance of 6,600 miles from Tallahassee. The meeting started with the signing of a proclamation expressing Florida's support for Israel. It was followed by a discussion on terrorism, water supplies, and emergency response. The First Amendment Foundation and a coalition of newspapers sued to stop the meeting, saying it violates the state's open government laws because the public did not have full access. A judge denied that emergency motion. The politicians met not only with Israeli government officials, but there was also a contingent of Tallahassee lobbyists and big-name Republican donors at events and traveling along with the elected officials. The total cost of the trip to taxpayers won't be known for several days. So, Jack, what was accomplished, and was this good for the state of Florida?
I think it was wonderful for the state of Florida and our continued relationship with Israel. There were over 20 memorandums of understanding. There were over 10 academic of our colleges represented there. You know, we were able to, with, obviously the meeting with the Israeli prime minister, you know, so just continuing to build our relationship. Obviously, the cabinet meeting was a ceremonial cabinet meeting. It was on Florida Channel, so we could have all watched it. And by the way, we wouldn't have to miss work watching it because it was on early in the morning of the, 8-hour, 9-hour time difference. So, you know, this is positive. This is things that we need to continue, as our economic power, our cultural power, our academic power, as Florida is.
Craig, it's not unusual for Florida or for politicians in Florida to embrace a foreign policy, because oftentimes politicians here in Florida have an attitude toward Cuba or have an attitude toward Venezuela. So this kind of continues in that tradition, right?
Yes, and a part of that's a reflection of what a melting pot Florida is, because each of those has its own population here in Florida of voters who are, by going overseas, you can actually appeal to people here.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I'm concerned about the idea of holding not just one of these trade missions, which are controversial enough because people are concerned that lobbyists and fat cats can have access to lawmakers in a way that average people don't. And there's always this idea that you go over there and who's paying for the hotel stays, who's paying for the junkets to go to all the tourist sites or whatever they're going to do when they're over there, who's paying for it, and how does that affect votes when people come back? But now they're conducting public business over there in a way that the average person can't just attend the meeting. I heard there were technical glitches with the transmissions that were made available. And why in the world does the cabinet need to conduct business in a foreign country where, by the way, the prime minister is facing corruption charges and couldn't even build a government? Mm-hmm. This doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And also, by the way, it put a bunch of extra onus on press because they had to spend all this extra money to go over there to try and cover what was going on and make sure that there wasn't undue influence placed on the legislators when they were over there. So, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's a great publicity stunt for the governor, but I'm not sure it's that great for the people of Florida.
Well, at least it was a 4 or 5 day trip, and a lot, as Jack said, the meeting was on TV. Eric talked about the glitches, but the meeting was on TV, but I guess we don't know what went on the other part of that trip, the 4 or 5 days that right. were outside the meeting.
And I think that is a huge concern for Floridians and the Sunshine Law. I also agree that it was a just giant publicity stunt from my perspective, and I think it was really geared to drum up base and support for Governor DeSantis and the South Florida constituency. So that is how I viewed the trip, and I don't think that that the people of Florida were well served with the accessibility of our governor meeting in Israel, as well as it's on the taxpayers' dime.
Jack, what would you say back?
I got to throw back. It must be working because Governor DeSantis' approval ratings are over 60%. Which is one thing. Secondly, you look at, yes, it is important for South Florida. And the Jewish population of the state is a significant part. It's part of our melting pot that we all talked about. But I also, one thing that should be mentioned is that Representative Fine's, anti-Semitism and his bill was passed. It was passed unanimously, and it was signed over there. And that really makes a statement of our, partnership with Israel. They are the only democracy in that part of the world. They're the only ones that really aren't out looking to, take us down in one way or another.
Is the governor going to be making visits to countries in Africa? Is he going to be going to Latin America? Is he going to be going to the Caribbean? There are other places where Floridians have hailed from, where Florida's attitude toward that government is just as important, if not more important. So are we going to see those kind of trips?
These
are the questions that come up when you single out one country to not only do a trade visit, which, you know, lots of states do, but to actually conduct official business.
All right. So is this the governor's way of peeling off Jewish voters from Southeast Florida who largely vote Democratic? Is it a way for him to split the Democratic coalition? Is that what's going on here? Is that the ultimate purpose? Jack, you wouldn't agree with that.
I would not agree with that. Yeah. I just think the business opportunities, you know, one of the presentations that I would have liked to have seen is that, you know, when they had the cabinet meeting, one was about the water management. One thing that Israel has done, their water management and their resources and the desalination and all the things they do, for you think about what's their country is 75% desert. You know, so they've really managed it. And obviously, as our growth, you know, of our state, as we had, you know, 750 people a day, X million more in the next number of years, water management continues to be a significant issue and a challenge and thing that we have to manage and continue to manage.
So maybe it would have been better to have the cabinet meeting here and have someone from Israel come over and talk to our people about that, where citizens from Florida who have concerns about those things could also be there and listen and ask questions.
I'll flip that back, because I was glad that Visit Florida had a presence over there, because if you look at the flights that are coming mm-hmm. from that part of the world to increase our visitors and our tourism, you know, and coming over, that continues, and Israel, you know, has a...
Visit Florida is a government agency. That's not the people of Florida having access to the conversation, which is what we're talking about. And you know, in your setup piece, you talked about how a judge... did not stop the meeting. Well, that was because the attorneys for the governor and the cabinet couldn't be served with copies of the lawsuit. It wasn't a reflection of whether or not there was merit in the actual request to ask them to not do this. And that lawsuit is I think going to still go forward in an attempt to stop this from happening in the future, so that the people of Florida have access to their cabinet when they're conducting official business.
Lisa, what do you think about the question of, is the governor trying to peel off Jewish voters who tend to vote Democratic in the state of Florida? Is this his attempt to do
that? I view it that way. I view that this is a direct appeal to Florida Jewish voters, and I think that the global community and international community, no one is paying attention to that Governor DeSantis was there. They are focused on what is going on with Prime Minister Netanyahu. This is completely getting trampled on, and really it's at the cost of Florida taxpayers, and I completely agree that this business should have occurred in Florida.
I'm not sure it was quite as targeted to the Jewish voters as it is to the evangelical voters, because I think Israel is far more important an issue to them than it is to the Jewish voters in South Florida.
And that's the number one core constituency these days of the GOP.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, environmental groups across the state are asking Governor DeSantis to veto a bill limiting restrictions that local governments can place on new developments.
They say a provision pertaining to legal fees could stop advocates from suing to protect the Everglades in the future. The bill is HB 7103, which lawmakers passed on the final day of this year's session. One of the bill's provisions requires that those who lose development challenges in court to pay both parties legal fees. The Sierra Club and about 40 other environmental organizations say the law would have a chilling effect on future efforts to protect Florida's environment.
Well, Craig, this is another of the governor's tests. The governor has done some positive things for the environment since he took office. This is another one of those tests. Environmentalists are asking him to veto it. And is this going to be, how will environmentalists view this if he does not veto this measure?
Well, they're still angry over him signing the toll roads bill, because they felt like that was a real, you know, do or die thing. The steps he's taken so far look good and may have good results later on, but that was a you know, where the rubber meets the road, pardon the pun, issue, and he failed them completely in that. And so now here's another one where you have a bill that basically came up out of nowhere and passed the legislature on the last day of session and caught a lot of people by surprise, and it's being viewed as sort of this sneak attack on environmental groups or civic groups or not-in-my-backyard groups that don't want a particular development, you know, changing the character of the place where they live. And so if this gets signed into law, then they'll have to weigh whether it's worth the financial risk to try and stop it, or whether they'll say, well, you know, if we lose, we're going to lose big. And so we may not be able to pursue this, and it makes things a lot. You know, it's another step by the legislature of developers' full employment and Social Welfare Act.
But Jack, are there too many frivolous lawsuits against development? I mean, are developers' backs against the wall, do you think?
No, yes, I agree. There's way too many frivolous lawsuits, and we have them, you know, in Southwest Florida also. And I think hopefully that part of this legislation will take care of is that, all right, before I go, and when the cities win 99% of these lawsuits, but they're spending millions of our taxpayer dollars, why are we doing this? So, you know, there's so many layers in from local municipalities to city to county, you know, that have already have the protections in for these issues. Why are we, you know, why spend the money to defend something? Because if it's an issue, you know, you don't like this particular project and you can sit there and stonewall it for 20 years, you know, and then what besides costing the taxpayers money and then you lose, what good has this done?
I walk around downtown St. Petersburg. I look around Tampa. I don't get the sense that developers don't have the ability to create the projects that they want to create. I don't get the sense that there's all these lawsuits that are keeping developers from building condos. What we have is we have sprawl. We have a lot of development that isn't planned adequately. We have a lot of traffic that isn't adequately funneled or handled. And more housing being created that will create more traffic that is not being planned for. And so now we have legislation that's going to make it harder for environmental groups to file the kind of lawsuits that would draw people's attention to those problems. I don't understand why this is necessary. And I wish somebody would define for me what's too many quote-unquote frivolous lawsuits. We already have a situation where we have a level of development where it hasn't been planned for well and it hasn't been controlled well. Why are we creating a situation where more of that is likely to happen?
At least I think that's the big question. I mean, does this legislation tilt the scales in favor of developers, or does it just maybe even things out?
I think it definitely tilts the scales towards the developers. One of the most critical pieces to protecting the Everglades, for example, is local comprehensive plans. And what happens with this is the developers will come in and they're not necessarily in line with these local comprehensive plans that protect our waterways, protect environmentally sensitive lands. And so the developers are going to come in and they're going to be able to override a lot of these local comprehensive plans it's going to remove the power from the community advocates and environmental groups in order to fight back. Only the wealthy are going to be the ones that are going to be able to speak out and stand up.
Jack, do you think the governor's going to sign this?
I do not have a crystal ball that works for Governor DeSantis. Governor Scott would have signed it immediately. I'm not sure about Governor DeSantis. Obviously, we hope he does, you know, to balance things out a little bit. But it's a $64 question.
I was hoping you had the inside track.
No. Now that he's back from Israel, we'll see. And I want also, on the toll road, the funding this year was not to build the toll road. It was to do the studies and the beginning parts. There's still many more parts before the first, but part of that road is done.
Construction's supposed to start in 2 years, so.
But they still got to get through two more legislative sessions,
Pinellas Sheriff.
I was just going to say, let me make two really quick points.
Okay.
One is, you brought up a good point, which is before Governor Scott and the legislature got rid of the Department of Community Affairs, that agency could step in and say, look, the changes that are being proposed here don't fit in with the comprehensive plan. Let's look for another way to work this around or make it more palatable. And so you wouldn't need lawsuits. And the second is, the way the legal structure is set up now, if you sue, if you have a frivolous lawsuit, there is a mechanism for the winning party to then go back to court and ask for fees. This bill would automatically award the fees.
So you're saying that the scales really then are being tipped toward the developers?
There's a thumb on the scale. Yeah.
All right. Well, Pinellas Sheriff Bob Gualtieri, who chaired the state commission that investigated the 2018 massacre at the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, made a presentation to the county school board this week trying to make the case for allowing armed teachers.
Previously, the Pinellas School Board had said it's opposed to allowing teachers to carry weapons. However, Gualtieri's presentation seemed to change some board members' minds, according to the Tampa Bay Times.
Cops can't be everywhere all the time. So this is about a force multiplier, and this is about two is better than one, three is better than two, and four is better than three. And school personnel are those people that are going to be there. They can mitigate that harm and stop that shooter.
Concerned about unintentional discharges of firearms, sure. We're also concerned about guns being used in situations where some students, especially students of color, are already over-disciplined. And then I think I'm also concerned that it creates a rupture in the student-teacher relationship.
The sheriff said those who apply to carry weapons would be put through a rigorous background check, then undergo extensive training that goes beyond what sworn officers receive at the police academy. School staff allowed to carry a weapon in schools would use a retention holster, the sheriff says, to prevent the weapon from falling out.
So, Eric, I think Sheriff Gualtieri has some juice in Pinellas County. I think he carries some weight. And I think that, at least from reading the Times coverage, he may have swayed a vote or two on the Pinellas School Board.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see the meeting. But I have a child in high school in Pinellas. And I'm just looking through at this in terms of logic. Okay, school shootings are horrific, but they don't happen that often. So we're talking about trying to guard against the possibility that it might happen by increasing the amount of deadly weapons that are in every school. And we're going to give them to teachers whose main job is instructing our children. Now, what we know about the Stoneman Douglas shooting is that there were cops on the scene who didn't confront the shooter because they were afraid of confronting him. People who are trained law enforcement officers whose job it was to go into a situation like that didn't confront him. So expecting a teacher whose job and training is mostly centered on teaching our children to take on that responsibility, I think, is asking too much. And I think it's creating a situation where it's far more likely that someone will be accidentally hurt by a firearm will be taken from a teacher in an emergency situation, or they won't be able to act because they're not law enforcement officers. It's much more likely that something like that will happen than there is that a teacher will successfully foil a school shooting. We have police officers who have trouble discerning whether or not an average citizen has a weapon or not, whether they're dangerous or not, whether they're committing a crime or not. Now we're asking our teachers to take on all of that extra responsibility when it's hard enough for people who are trained and doing that job every day to do it. I think this is an incredibly terrible
Jack, idea. What do you think? Is the potential for going wrong as much as Eric said?
I don't think so because of the training. By the way, one thing you mentioned earlier about school shootings aren't that often. There's been 18 of them in the United States so far in 2019.
In the entire United States?
In the United States.
How many in Florida?
I don't know the answer on that one.
Yeah, you don't know because it's not something that happens every
day. No, but at the same time, 18 is too many. Two, the training. 30 counties have signed on to this plan. The training that they're going through, if your county sheriff doesn't have the right training, the people, the Guardian program, have to go to the counties that have the right training. So there is a, you know, very, very disciplined training program. And so, and also, it's optional for the teachers. And it's not something that is a mandatory program. If they don't want to do it, obviously they're not going to do it. So, you know, it is one way or another, we've got to make sure our children are safe.
Quickly, because we're running out of time.
If I could just step in, I think that we should go with expert-endorsed policies over arming the teachers in our classrooms, such as threat assessment programs, basic upgrades, security upgrades. There is no evidence that supports that putting the guns in the classroom actually helps to mitigate or intervene during school shootings.
All right. Can I say one thing real quick? This is the classic Florida situation of trying to solve a problem cheaply. You're going to arm the teachers and you're not going to pay them any extra for having guns and putting themselves in the line of fire. Pay them what you would pay a cop. Give them that extra money.
And the one thing also that this whole bill has is there is putting money in for mental health, which is the core of a lot of this issue.
All right. Well, abortion rights advocates are challenging a state senator for controversial comments that have been called racist. It's the latest flashpoint in the growing debate over abortion.
Ocala's State Senator Dennis Baxley has suggested in recent interviews that abortion is causing Europeans to be replaced by immigrants and paving the way for the end of Western civilization.
When you get a birth rate less than 2%, that society is disappearing. And it's being replaced by folks that come behind them and immigrate don't wish to assimilate that society, and they do believe in having children.
So is this an economic?
So I think you see that there are long-range impacts to your society when the answer is to exterminate.
Planned Parenthood affiliates want Baxley's colleagues in the Senate to condemn the remarks. In the just-completed legislative session, Baxley sponsored a bill that would have outlawed most abortions once a fetal heartbeat is detected. That bill failed to pass. The U.S. birth rate has been dropping, despite abortions hitting an historic low, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
All right, Lisa, what did you think of Senator Baxley's remarks?
To be honest, I think that that's a really pathetic attempt by a Florida legislator to spread fear-mongering through conspiracy theories. I don't think that there is any validation to his argument, and I genuinely believe Western civilization is not going anywhere, and we all know it. All
right. I would say this is a classic bit of argument that's used by white supremacists all over the world to justify whatever political outcome they want to advocate for. This is historic bigotry. We've seen it over decades, over hundreds of years, arguing that your civilization is threatened by some incoming force or something that's killing off your people. It's just terrible to see that these kind of tactics are still being used in 2019, given all the history that we have that tells us how bigoted this kind of talk
is. Jack, you get the last word on this.
The population of the age group of our children is down 10% in the last number of years, and it's going to be down 25% across the United States by 2025. The reason for that? The recession. That's when the birth rates really dropped in this country. Beyond that, no comment.
You solved the recession, you changed the problem. All right. Well, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? Lisa, let's start with you, your other big story.
I would like to look at defunding the disaster relief programs that have just recently come up and just paying attention to where our funding's going in terms of preparing for hurricane season.
Congress being stopped a little bit by some members of Congress to pay the additional aid. Eric, your other big story?
Well, we're looking at a number of Hollywood companies coming forward and saying they're not going to, or they're considering not doing business in Georgia because of the anti-abortion bill that's about to become law there. We've seen Disney, Warner Media, Netflix. Now, they haven't actually taken any action yet because the bill hasn't taken effect yet. But Florida is right below Georgia, and it seems like there's an opportunity to pick up some business there to woo some of these productions that might be considering leaving Georgia because of this bill.
Are they powerful enough to change the legislature in Georgia? I mean, to change their minds on the issue?
If they actually leave, it would be. I'm skeptical that they're actually going to leave. Yeah. But if they do leave, Florida has an opportunity to maybe restore some of those tax breaks that they have taken away for Hollywood production and bring some of that business down.
By the way, the largest studio is in Georgia is owned by the Cathy family that own Chick-fil-A, so I'm not really that worried about how many studios are in productions.
I don't know about that.
Jack, your other big story.
The other big story, President Trump's coming back to Orlando in the middle of June, you know, where he's going to be here quite a bit for the next year and a half. We're going to see a lot of the other candidates from the Democratic side starting to show up next 2-3 months. But big news, President Trump's coming back to Orlando.
Start the presidential campaign right now. Craig, your other big story.
A group of South Florida mayors have announced that they're forming this task force to work on issues together of climate change resiliency. And you're starting to see, I think, a lot more of that where the cities are stepping in where the state has dropped the ball. And they're saying, well, we know climate change is real because we can see what's happening in our streets. And so they're taking the steps to deal with that.
Big problem in Miami Beach and elsewhere.
At Shore Acres in St. Pete.
That's right. All right. Thanks for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV with my guests on that panel. The two journalists were Craig Pittman and Eric Deggans. And we also heard from Jack Brill, who's the acting chair of the Sarasota Republican Party, and Lisa Perry, who is a Democrat from Pinellas County. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard here for the last 25 minutes or so, you can email the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. We had a bunch of emails come in. I'll read some of them and then see what your take is. And again, our phone number, if you want to call in, is 813-239-9663. David writes this regarding the show Florida This Week, which, by the way, appears on the PBS station WEDU every Friday night at 8:30. David writes this: you had a really great lineup on the TV show this week, a great combo. I hope you get that dream team back again on soon. Though the theme music of your TV show is kind of cheesy. It's way too dramatic, writes David. And he goes on to say, I have a complaint about the Florida cabinet meeting held in Israel. It's simply too far away for Florida residents to attend. And I thought that Tallahassee was too far away for most people already. What's next? Florida legislature holds a special session in Singapore, writes David sarcastically. All right. Thank you, David, for your thoughts. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Adam writes this: the trip by the cabinet was absolutely a publicity stunt. It shows what he really cares about, the governor. Instead of moving the meeting to somewhere in Central Florida where they could try to make it accessible to more people, they move it to a foreign country 6,000 miles away where only lobbyists and big donors can afford to attend. I think one of the big questions, yes, of that cabinet meeting last week is that if the cabinet meeting took a few hours and there were big-time lobbyists on that trip, and if there were major Republican donors already in Israel, donors to Republican causes in Israel, and they were meeting with the Florida officials, what do reporters know about those private meetings? What are we able to ascertain about the meetings between the lobbyists and members of the Florida cabinet? What can we find out about it? What are we ever going to learn about it? And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Bubba, I don't know if that's his real name, but Bubba writes this: it's funny how your guest mentioned Visit Florida while the governor and the Florida legislature are trying to starve the agency of operating funds. Let's change the name to Visit Israel, writes Bubba. Okay, Bubba. And then Anonymous from the 941 area code writes this: regarding the issue of overdevelopment in Florida, I believe the bigger impacts include excess water usage, depleting our aquifer, and natural freshwater tables enough to change local weather patterns, writes this anonymous person. He goes on, or she goes on to say, sewage, fertilizer, pesticides, and herbicide runoff combined in the perfect storm to fuel algal cyanobacteria and dinoflagellate blooms. There you go. I mean, I think the question about House Bill 7103 is, will it make people who want to enforce local comprehensive plans less likely to sue the developers, knowing that if they lose the lawsuit, they would be responsible for the legal fees? I think that's the big question. 813-239-9663. And Michael writes this. He says, regarding Army teachers, there are many former military people that enter the field of education after their deployment. From my conversations with them, they are not happy at all about weapons on campus, citing their own knowledge of guns and the training required, and PTSD being triggered simply knowing who has the weapon. Regarding Israel, right-wing evangelicals support Israel so stridently because they believe it will hasten the return of Jesus. It has nothing to do with supporting Jewish people, writes Michael. Michael, thank you for that. Yeah, you know, one of the details about guns, and we're not quite sure where this is going to go, but the Tampa Bay Times story last week mentioned that teachers might be holding their guns in retention holsters. Now, I'm not quite sure what a retention holster is, but it sounds like they're saying that the teachers may be walking around the schools with guns in a holster. What do you think about that? And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And Frank Knox is our phone producer today. And there's some other news stories that we could talk about, and I'll mention a few of them. A senior North Korean official who had been reported as purged over the failed nuclear summit with Washington was shown in state media enjoying a concert alongside leader Kim Jong-un. North Korean publications today showed Kim Yong-chol sitting near a clapping Kim Jong-un and two other top officials during a musical performance by the wives of Korean People's Army officers. Kim Yong-choi had been North Korea's top nuclear negotiator and met with President Trump at the White House while setting up Trump's two summit meetings with Kim Jong-un. A South Korean newspaper last week cited an unnamed source to report that Kim Yong-chol was sentenced to hard labor following the collapse of the second summit meeting with President Trump in February. So again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. It's been 30 years since the Tiananmen Square protest. China's economy has catapulted up the world rankings, yet political repression in China is harsher than ever. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims are held in re-education camps without charge. Student activists face relentless harassment, and leaders in the beleaguered dissident community have been locked up or simply vanished. It's a far cry from the hopes of the idealistic student demonstrators and a level of control far beyond what many imagined possible, even after the army's bloody crushing of the protests in China on the nights of June 3rd, 4th, 1989. All right, let's go to the phones. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And I think maybe Frank is out. So let's take this caller. Caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Marcherie in Tampa.
Hi, how are you? What would you like to talk about?
Basically, I feel like if they go ahead with arming teachers in schools, I feel like the stand your ground law is going to be utilized a lot more, where a teacher may feel threatened in the classroom, say, oh, he or she may I thought they had a gun or a weapon, so therefore I shot them, and it was self-defense. And I just feel like that is going to become a thing if they start arming teachers. And also the concern of if there is a middle school or high school person in the classroom who wants to take the gun from the teacher, that could become an issue as well. Somebody who may not have had access to a firearm before now has access to overpowering the teacher and taking their firearm to do whatever damage they want to do in the classroom. So I just think that, me personally, I would not send my son to school into the classroom if teachers are wearing firearms in a holster. I don't care what kind of holster it is. I think that basically it's just a huge mess waiting to happen, and more lives, I think, are going to be taken because of it. And the Florida Stand Your Ground law is going to be used in too many cases in the classroom.
You know, when I was reading the report in the Tampa Bay Times last week, and Sheriff Gualteri in Pinellas County said, look, there isn't much time. Once a shooting begins, it's over pretty quickly in a school. And therefore, that's why he wants to arm teachers. I think the Parkland shooting massacre took 4 minutes. Sheriff, all the other local school boards around the M&F listening area, places like Pasco and Hillsboro, they've all said no to arming teachers. I think the one place that might be up in the air is Pinellas County. But the sheriff there is making some inroads, making some friends, I think, and suggesting to people that they ought to listen to him. He was the one that chaired the Parkland Shooting Massacre Commission, and he's trying to convince the school board in Pinellas County that they ought to consider voluntarily arming teachers and let it be done by in a case-by-case basis of teachers that step forward. But he says, look, you know, these shootings are over very quickly. That's why we need to have teachers armed in schools if they choose to arm. And what would you say back to the sheriff?
I would say if you choose to push that side of things, if you think that you're correct in that way, I feel sorry for the lives that are going to be taken because teachers have guns in the classroom, because of the scenarios that I have just described. And I think that it's going to take, unfortunately, some lost lives within the classroom before these people who are pushing for teachers to be armed realize just what they're trying to get pushed through. And I think that they're going to be it's going to be too late.
Yeah, you know, I think your point is a good one, Marcherie, that is the greater danger from somebody coming in from the outside with a weapon planning to do a mass shooting in a school. Is that the greater danger, or is the greater danger that either a teacher feels threatened and pulls out a gun, or a student grabs a gun out of the holster of the teacher, or a group of students overpower a teacher that they don't like and then grab the gun? Which is the greater danger? And I think your point's a good one. The greater danger may be just the fact that the teacher has a gun in a holster in a school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Yeah, we'll see what Pinellas County does. Let's go to Teresa, who's in St. Petersburg. Hi, Teresa. You're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Simple solution to abortion. Go adopt the children. I've said that before. I don't know how many times.
You know, Teresa, you make that call. Let me ask you this. When you hear the term pro-life, and you've made this case before in calling in, you say they're pro-birth.
Yep.
What would you say to reporters that continue to use the term pro-life to describe the anti-abortion movement? Should reporters say that really it's a pro-birth movement because, by and large, these folks are not against wars, they're not against Medicaid expansion, they want to cut food stamps, they vote for people in Congress who are punitive against the poor and don't want to see health care expanded or food aid expanded, or they certainly are in favor of capital punishment, so why not call them pro-birth because that's what they are? Should that be what reporters call the anti-abortion people?
Well, that sounds like a good term. I think anti-choice, anti-life after it comes out of the room. So pro-birth seems to be the best one because once the baby's out of the womb, they really don't care what happens to it because of all the the cuts for all these programs that cut people's lives. So that's what I've never understood. But I couldn't listen on Friday where I work on Friday. I can't listen. But I guess some guy called in because the lady with the comment when he gets a uterus. That's how I feel. I'm 60 years old, and I've heard this conversation for the last 40 years of my life. And I'm just sick to death of people, you know, wanting to legislate, you know, my parts. And I understand that people that are, you know, anti-choice, they want life, well, that's fine. Then they should go take care of that life. I chose not to have children. I was on birth control for 31 years, had to pay for it myself, never covered in insurance. And I was lucky enough to go to the All Women's Health Center where it wasn't as expensive, but, you know, I made my choice and I took precautions. And if I had an accident with any other person than my husband, I probably would have chose an abortion because the two guys I had lived with before him were totally useless money-wise. The one told me if I got pregnant and kept the baby, he was going to disappear. And the other one, I would probably still be fighting for back child support after 40 years. So it's not just the woman's issue, the men, a lot of the men don't step up and take care of their children, right?
Yeah, I think that's certainly true.
Yeah. So it's not, you know, people think women just, oh, well, I'll just have one, no big deal. I think a lot of women, it's just not an easy decision. I've known people that have had them, and it wasn't something that was just, you know, oh, well, okay, I'll just go have one. That's not the process people go through. And there's a whole lot of other issues. There's health issues with women. There's health issues with the child. It's not just, you know, a lot of people think they just do it for, you know, for birth control. And I don't like to, men just don't understand this because they don't have the working parts of a woman that our bodies are very complex. We're just like walking hormones. And there's a whole kinds of issues in this body of ours that men just don't understand because they don't have parts.
Yeah. All right, Teresa, thanks a lot.
That's about all I can say.
Okay, all right, Teresa, thank you for your call. All right, great. All right, so you heard Teresa wanting people to think. What do you think? 813-239-9663. In the next hour, Sean Cadan on the Midpoint program is going to talk about some more of these issues, including arming teachers and toll highways through rural Florida. So stick around, and Sean is going to continue that part of the conversation. I'm going to read some more of these emails before we go back to the phones. And Sue writes this regarding arming teachers. She says, no, no, no to teachers with guns. I know a lot of teachers, and guns should not be available at schools. Kevin writes this, what if the shooter had body armor on and a gun with a silencer plus extra capacity magazines? How is a teacher expected to handle that? Writes Kevin. Yeah, I think that at least the the shooter in Virginia on Friday, believe, had not only a silencer, but I think he might have had extra capacity magazines, too. Barbara writes this, why aren't people demanding guns be allowed at the RNC and NRA national meetings, writes Barbara, saying there's a bit of hypocrisy there. I should say, too, that not everybody who is anti-abortion stays out of helping those in need. I know there's a lot of people that are involved in the foster care, involving in helping foster care kids and also involved in helping the homeless. I think my point is really the kind of politicians that say that they're pro-life and then they vote to cut the food stamp allocation. 813-239-9663. Let's go to, let's see who's been holding for a while. John in St. Pete's been there a while. Hey, John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. My comment on the, I don't think teachers should be armed. I think you should harden the schools and have metal detectors and make sure nobody's got a gun inside at all.
Yeah, they should do that at the very least, right?
Yeah. Right, and I think that any kind of violence, even if the teacher is defending the children, is going to traumatize the entire school. So you've got to eliminate all violence, and you do that by hardening and, again, searching everybody before they go in. So
yeah, why is it there an alarm in buildings indicating when somebody's passing through the alarm detector saying, hey, this person has a gun? I mean, I was thinking about that in Virginia last week, is that there should be an alarm. If you go into a building and you're carrying a big piece of metal, some alarm should go off.
Absolutely. We can prevent people from getting on airplanes with guns. Why can't we, you know, do that at the entrances of public buildings? I mean,
schools and like city offices, yeah.
Right, and then you have to have trained people with weapons. Like, you know, school resource officers are the best bet. You know, they're trained.
Yeah.
You know, and teachers aren't.
Although we know there's problems with school resource officers, as we know what happened in Pasco County just a few weeks ago when the school resource officer was in the cafeteria at lunchtime. Students were around, and his gun went off. It was in his holster. And luckily, the gun went off into the wall of the cafeteria, but he was a foot away from a student. And apparently, this is a gun that either has a safety that doesn't work or the safety wasn't engaged. It was very strange. So not every one of these school safety officers is handling their weapon rightly or correctly. Jerome writes this, evidently with the sheriff in Pinellas urging teachers to be armed, the student who intends on shooting up a school will not even have to bring the gun, writes Jerome, because the gun will already be there. Let's go to Bob in Winter Haven. Hey, Bob, you're on WMNF. Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Well, I'm calling about the teacher arming situation. My wife's a school teacher. And are they going to pay them extra for hazardous duty pay?
I don't think so. I think that was a point that one of my panelists, Craig Pittman, made, that they're not going to pay them extra money.
So they have to go through 140 hours worth of training and already stay underpaid?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Now, we'll have to check. We'll see if Pinellas County says okay to arming teachers. Bob, you're over in Winter Haven. You're in Polk County. I think Polk County has said they're not going to arm teachers.
I'm all for that. Yeah. It just seems ludicrous to me that you would even consider arming teachers without giving them some kind of extra pay for it.
Would it be okay if they got extra pay?
No, I still don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Just like your guy that emailed in a few minutes ago said that the gun's already there.
Yeah, that's scary. All right, Bob, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And let's go to Gary in Clearwater. Gary, by the way, you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. And Gary, is that you?
Yes.
All right, Gary, what would you like to say?
You know what? First of all, I cannot believe we're even having this discussion, period. No guns in schools. And also, in a situation like that, guess what? When the police officers are coming into the school and they see a teacher with the gun, they don't know she's a teacher. They're going to shoot her. Absolutely no guns in schools.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot. But Floridians did vote for politicians in the legislature and in the governor's office who favor this idea. So the legislature is pro-arming teachers, rather. And the governor, apparently, is pro-arming teachers. So what does that say? Does that represent the will of Floridians? That's the way we voted. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Clark in Ybor City. Clark, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Rob.
Hi.
Hey, Rob. I was up in Salem at May 24th for the Governor DeSantis' first execution. And all the optics on that were so wrong. He executed, I know the acts were horrible, but it was still a veteran who had PTSD and traumatic brain injury, you know, to do it Memorial Day weekend to execute a veteran. And then he also did it the day before he's leaving for Israel. So my statement at the Service of Remembrance was, could he talk, please, to some Jewish scholars there while he was there, you know, on their narrow basis that they allowed capital punishment. But then I was watching last week this week replays of his meetings. He was meeting with a university there, and he was saying come visit Florida, Miami beaches, just like Tel Aviv. And then he said that there would never be any BDS in Florida. And I just wondered if they knew what he was talking about, the boycott, divest, and sanction. And to talk about with free water issues, and DeSantis talking about water issues in Palestine, in the Gaza Strip, 95% of the people don't have access to clean water.
Yeah, in the Gaza Strip, there is a huge shortage of fresh water for drinking and for health care in the Palestinian territories, especially in the Gaza Strip. Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of things at once, but they kept talking about the gentleman on your TV show was talking about, you know, the water issues. Well, they can look right there in their backyard and provide clean water people. So anyway, thank you for all your shows, Rob. I appreciate it.
All right, Clark, thank you. And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. So many emails have come in, and every line is lit. But Wendell writes this. He said, minority teachers will be abnormally targeted, shot, and killed by security agents because the minority teachers will be presumed a threat because they have a gun, period. Unarmed minorities are shot and killed at a phenomenal rate already. Guns in schools will only exacerbate the statistic. It's a terrible idea, writes Wendell. And let's go back and take some more phone calls, and we're going to go to David in Bradenton. David, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hello.
Hey, David.
Good morning. I heard the woman talk about the defining whether a person should be referred to as anti-abortion or pro-life. The thing was mentioned about the irresponsibility of the fathers, you know, and I've always felt that the father of the children, they really need to be held responsible. And I don't know what's being done to ensure that, but the issue is that so many of these women are on their own and they have, they don't have the support that they need to take care of the kids. And these guys are out there footloose and fancy free. At least that's a presumption.
So, David, how would you make that work?
Well, it's easy to identify the father through paternity tests, I believe.
All right, so you would make the father pay, presumably pay for the, if the father was not in the house, you'd make the father pay for the raising of the child, for the medical care of the child, for the feeding of the child.
Child support.
Child,
absolutely.
Yep. All right.
Absolutely.
And what if they didn't? What would you do?
Well, I think at that point, I guess you got to incarcerate them. You have to make a law that you know, financial responsibility.
Now, we already incarcerate more people per capita than any other country in the world. We should be doing more incarceration?
Well, we should make these people stand up and face their responsibility. I don't know how we do that, but I don't hear enough talk about that.
What about reducing the number of unwanted children?
Well, from what I understand also, adopting a child is very difficult. And a lot of people have to go outside of the country in order to adopt kids. So I would take a look at the adoption program and perhaps make it easier for people to adopt children.
So you're okay with the rollback of abortion in the U.S.?
The rollback of abortion? I'm anti-abortion.
Yeah, I figured you were. So all the what's happening in the country is a good thing.
I think the fewer children that are aborted, the better, yes.
All right. David, thanks a lot. You get the last word. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for listening. Frank Knox has been our phone producer today. Coming up in the next hour, more talk about the legislature, including talk about the toll road expansion. This is 88.5 FM WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg.